first take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and you guys can hang out with us there. We're asking you a little lighthearted question. I mean, if you're going to turn around and I can create a golden ticket, you can only see one athlete right now, not dead or alive, one athlete today. You can only see one in action. Who would you want to see? Who's the best player in all of sports? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We ask that because you'll hear a little bit more from First Take over the course of the show about their thoughts on Patrick Mahomes and where he stands in the conversation of best athlete in all of sports. So we'll get more of your take, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we do that, though, I want to get to some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless with obviously a much heavier conversation. The conversation lies in the comments of DeSean Jackson. Remember, he went to Instagram where he tweeted a quote that has been improperly attributed to Hitler, but he tweeted the quote, and as a result, there was a firestorm of reaction, rightfully so, for tweeting anti-Semitic comments. Now, he apologized for that, and I think it's important that you hear his direct apology, because I won't be able to say it in the same way that he says it. So I want you to hear directly from him about why he's sorry and what he's sorry for.
I've been getting a lot of backlash and feedback from an Instagram post that I put on my Instagram story. I just want to extend an apology on the behalf of me and what I stand for, because I'm one that's fair, and I never want to put any race down or any people down. And my post was definitely not intended for anybody of any race to feel any type of way, especially the Jewish community. When I posted what I posted, I definitely didn't mean it to the extent that you guys took it. And I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm very apologetic, and I just want you guys to understand that it never was intended to put any race down or any religion down. I post things on my story all the time, and I just probably shouldn't have never posted anything that Hitler did, because Hitler was a bad person, and I know that. And I was just trying to uplift African Americans and slavery and just enlighten my people. So on behalf of myself, I just want to let you guys know I apologize. I didn't intend, any harm or any hatred towards any people. I'm for one, I'm for love. And I extend it every day. People that know me know I have no hatred in my heart. And I never try to, put another religion down to uplift my religion or my race. So, from the bottom of my heart, I just want you guys to understand that. And it's coming from me, my feelings. And I just hopefully everybody respects my platform, my opinions, to try to just enlighten my people and just let everybody know that it's no hatred.
Now, that's DeSean Jackson speaking directly on his social media, apologizing for anti-Semitic Instagram story that he posted. Should be noted, Steven Jackson continues to defend DeSean Jackson at this point on social media for what was said. The question is, what's the reaction to the comments and apologies as we're all trying to figure out how to navigate world that we're in and get reaction to anything that comes across that's hateful, anti-Semitic, or hurtful? So Stephen A. and Max reacted today on First Take to the comments and to the apology.
First of all, I'm Jewish, so I'd like to accept DeSean Jackson's apology, but I need to know more. So let me start by saying, anytime someone thinks they're quoting Adolf Hitler and doing it as though he's saying something important and true, and it involves Jewish people being bad, that is a bad thing to do. That's not, yes, you will offend not just Jewish people, but any righteous person. Just like I sit here on this show and defend all kinds of marginalized groups all the time and try to be an ally for them and an advocate for them, anyone who feels as I do of any background would feel the same way. Part of the quote, they will extort America. Their plan, meaning the Jews, for world domination won't work if the Negroes knew who they were. This is not about uplifting black people primarily. This is about, if you think about it, DeSean, why black people are in a bad position. Jews are being scapegoated. First of all, there's no truth in it. Jews do not have a plan for world domination. I have no plan for world domination, and there is no secret cabal with some plan for world domination. I don't even know what blackmail or extort America means in this context. I don't think you do either, and I don't think anyone does. It's unintelligible. It doesn't make any sense. And it plays on the worst kind of anti-Semitic tropes and stereotypes through the years, especially scapegoating Jews for problems. So what it appears to me is that Deshaun Jackson is susceptible to low-quality information. And in the internet age, it's very dangerous to be that way. For those, especially people who disseminate these messages, are hoping that influencers, like maybe Deshaun Jackson, who are susceptible to low quality information, accept this information as true, this disinformation as true, and disseminate it and use their influence to get people to agree with it. So if Deshaun Jackson wants to educate people, then Deshaun, you should become educated. I've dealt with Deshaun Jackson. Nice guy. I like him. But and I'd like to accept his apology, not just as a Jewish person, but as a person of social conscience. But I have to know more, Deshaun. When you say you're tweeting this not to offend anyone, but to uplift everyone, why does it say they? Why is the quote about white Jews in particular who have a plan for world domination? What is that about? You couldn't uplift African-Americans without singling out Jews falsely for having some kind of conspiracy to Jews in particular to keep black people down or uninformed in order that the Jews should dominate the world? Do you understand? And the fact that it was attributed to Hitler, and you thought that it was, it turns out it wasn't Hitler, but you thought it was? So I'm glad, Deshaun, that you apologized, and I would like to accept it. But, brother, I got to know more. I got to know much more. What you've explained so far doesn't cut it.
Max Kellerman, I called Deshaun Jackson yesterday. I spoke to him about it. He was incredibly contrite, very apologetic, because, in his words, his message was completely misconstrued. At that time, I informed him, well, it's your fault that it was misconstrued, because number one, you're talking about the Jewish community. Number two, or really, really number one, is that you mentioned Adolf Hitler. There's no win in that whatsoever. What in God's name would possess you to do such a thing in regards to that? Then he went into a little discussion about who he was around and what he was trying to say. But still in all, it was a bit convoluted, to say the least. And you saw when he tried to express himself on video that it was a bit convoluted. So in the end, what it comes down to is this. Deshaun Jackson was wrong. He was wrong to mention Adolf Hitler. He was wrong to talk about the Jewish community in that fashion, particularly without thorough explanation of the facts to really accentuate whatever point you were trying to make, because we still don't really, really understand it at this particular moment in time. And number three, and more importantly, consider who he works for. This is not about the National Football League at this particular moment in time, even though obviously they've issued a statement and said what they've had to say. This is about the fact that Howie Roseman, who runs football operations for the Philadelphia Eagles, is Jewish. It's about the fact that Jeffrey Lurie, who is the owner for the Philadelphia Eagles, he is Jewish. All right. And this is the man that cuts your check. You have to deal with the ramifications and the fallout from that, because make no mistake, there's going to be something, whether it's a suspension or even something more severe. Now, here's where I will speak up and come to Deshaun Jackson's defense. When he says that he meant no harm, there's nothing in this history that says that he does. He has been somebody that has been a good dude. He has contributed to the community. He has never disseminated anything close to anti-Semitic remarks in the past. We can't explain, nor can we condone what Deshaun Jackson did, because to be quite honest with you, even though I believe him as a person, I believe in his heart. I think he's a good person. I don't think he's trying to divide anybody. I think in a weird, inarticulate kind of way, he was definitely trying to uplift, you know, folks within the black community. I don't think this was the way to go about doing it. I think it's absolutely right for folks to speak out against him. I don't even have a problem with former foot president of the Eagles, Joe Banner. He's the guy that drafted Deshaun Jackson in the second round back in 2008, if I remember correctly. He spoke out against Deshaun Jackson by saying, if this were a white person that had said that about a black person, you best believe there would be meetings. We'd be discussing what to do with him and whether or not to keep him on the roster. Factually, that's correct. But from a heart perspective, you do have to take into account somebody's body of work, their history, and the fact that this is a clear, glaring mistake, but one he openly admitted almost immediately. And I think
that's what he has to address,
Stephen A. Cut the guy some slack.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I think cut some slack is difficult as a term, and I hear Stephen A. use it there. But to me, there has to be some level of, so what, now what? Now that this has happened, what happens next? And I think that's an under-talked about portion of this. Is the answer isn't always to immediately cut, cancel, wave everybody. Sometimes the answer is, can we have conversations and gain better understanding? At some level, to me, gaining better understanding and knowledge of why what you've done has hurt people and how you cannot do it again is an important process that we're all going through. So that's some straight talk. Straight talk wireless, no contracts, no compromise. Let's head over to the Shell Penzo Performance. We're going to get some expertise on what's going on right now. Philadelphia Inquirer Eagles reporter Les Bowen joins us there. Les, thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it. Hope you're safe and all is well for you. So for the Eagles at this point, what's next as they try and figure out how to cope with this DeSean Jackson situation?
In yesterday's statement, they kind of laid out what they wanted to happen. They talked about needing DeSean to be, a phone guy, but all
it feels like we're getting some bad reception issues there with Les. We're going to try and get him on a better line. So while we try and get him on a better line that you can hear, he raises the immediate portion of the answer to my question, what's next? And the Eagles said in their statement they're going to continue to monitor all of the cliche things you say. I don't know that there's a definitive next action that can be taken, especially, again, in the times that we're in right now. I think what's difficult for everybody is as we continue to figure out how to better navigate these waters and how to make sure that people are being right to everybody in as many ways as possible, it makes it more difficult to figure out how to handle each one of these situations. The other part of it is, I mean, I don't know that you can handle any of these situations in a bubble or in a vacuum. Like, it feels like every one of them is going to create a new set of challenges. And one thing that we constantly seem to crave as a society is a blanket statement that we can make across the board. I don't know that we have that here. I don't know that we're going to see every instance of this is going to be handled the same, nor should it be. I think we've got Les back, so let's try it. Les, thanks for your time again. What's next for the Eagles is where we were. So, my friend, what is next?
Yeah, well, they issued a statement yesterday that kind of laid out what they expect from DeSean, not just an apology, but work toward understanding and healing and so forth. And I think he's already made some gestures in that regard. I know he's met with a rabbi locally and has pledged to, you know, educate himself and become more of a force for, healing and understanding and all that. I think that's where we're at. I don't see them releasing him. They didn't hint at that in their statement. The league issued a statement in which it made it pretty clear that they're just kind of letting the Eagles handle this. Obviously, there are always practical considerations in these matters, like the $12.536 million cap hit they would take, if they released him. And the fact that they kind of need him because they don't have a great wide receiving core. So, you know, I think as long as he continues to be sincere in his attempts to atone for this, I think, you know, it'll all kind of go away eventually.
We're talking to Les Bowen, Philadelphia Inquirer Eagles reporter. You're around this team all the time. So as a result, you see enough of DeSean
I'm not. Nobody is.
Fair point.
In a metaphorical sense, I am anyway.
Right. Usually you're around the team all the time. So as somebody that sees these guys day in and day out or talks to them so frequently, what was your initial reaction to the Instagram story when it was posted?
Yeah, I was like, what the heck is this? I don't think DeSean's ever talked about anything like that. It's just not anything that I've ever associated with him. I can't really explain it. I haven't been able to talk to him directly since this happened. I've tried, but I don't think he's doing a lot of that right now. it kind of came out of left field. And I think that's one thing in his favor. If there was evidence that he had held these beliefs, you know, or that this was some kind of big issue with him, with Jewish people, I think there'd be it'd be a different story. But yeah, it was something you didn't expect. We're kind of worrying about how in the world NFL teams are going to open camps and keep players safe and things like that right now, whether there's going to be preseason games. And this kind of landed, you know, very unexpectedly on our plates. And I think there've been some criticism of the media locally in that this sort of developed over the weekend, but it was the 4th of July weekend. Most of us are kind of on vacation officially right now, and we kind of weren't paying that much attention until it all kind of blew up. I guess really Monday evening was when he posted the last stuff with the Hitler quote, the alleged Hitler quote that wasn't really a Hitler quote. And then all of a sudden it was a big deal. And, you know, I think in another type of atmosphere, if it was during the season or if it was, you know, even during camp in a normal time, I think this would have gotten more attention before it did.
Talking to Les Bowen, Philadelphia Inquirer Eagles reporter. And Les, I think that's a really interesting point, actually, and a real one that, you know, 4th of July weekend, everybody's sort of living their lives. For the NFL that's navigating these new waters of trying to be more socially aware, I mean, how do they have to look at these things and figure out how important is it to have a uniform policy of how they'll handle these things in the future?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer to that. I mean, this wasn't like anything that he had done to anyone, or, you know, it wasn't any kind of criminal activity or anything like that. It was kind of off-base, bizarro Instagram posts. I don't know that you can have a policy for that, really. It would probably have to be collectively bargained, you know, whatever you decided to do. It's just I don't know what, maybe better education is the only thing the NFL can really do. You know, I wasn't aware of the fact that the NFL probably needed to tell people that Hitler was bad and quoting Hitler was bad, but kind of here we are, you know. I think the use of social media is a problem that has grown exponentially in the last 10 years, and it's something that I don't think any sports league has really gotten its arms around.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at Les Bowen. And Les, I really appreciate your time and your insight and your expertise to this coming from Philadelphia. Really appreciate it, and I hope you and yours are safe. Thanks so much for joining us.
Take care. Thank you.
I think one of the important things that we've got to acknowledge again is that as much as the world has changed, we don't have all the answers. I mean, how are these things supposed to be handled? Well, we understand it. And what Les said there, and we both laughed about, is, you know, I don't think you really had to tell somebody that putting something up that's attributed to Hitler is probably not a good idea. We laugh about it, but at some point, the league's going to have to figure out how to handle these. And I'll go back to what Emmanuel Acho tweeted yesterday when he said, DeSean Jackson's comments were offensive and uneducated. However, ignorance is no excuse for prejudice of any kind. Google is too free for this to keep happening. We must all learn more and be better, period. And that's the expectation, but that's a new expectation. I mean, as silly as that sounds, this didn't matter as much to people a few months ago as it does right now. So now, in a level of heightened awareness, we have to understand that there's heightened accountability. And with heightened accountability comes a different expectation group that has to be explained and taught. And that's part of what I have to say here. It's so easy for all of us to come out and say, cut this guy, fire this person, erase this person from all of society. I guess my charge is to continue doing what I've been saying we should be doing over the last couple of months, at least what I'm trying to do. Listen more, learn more. And when somebody speaks out, where's the line? There has to be some line between accountability and education. And I don't think any of us really know where that line is or how to walk it yet, but we're all trying to figure it out. Coming up, is the possibility of not having college football this year becoming more of a reality? We'll get a significant answer about that today, and we're going to discuss it with one of my favorite experts next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Don't forget ESPN Radio. Presented by Progressive Insurance with more than 30 unique coverage options available. Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Com. A lot of you guys are still reacting to what we said just a few minutes ago and my comments as we were trying to get figured out what to do in the DeSean Jackson situation. And I understand I'm seeing a lot of comparisons online to anything that was said by Drew Brees. And I'm not handling either of those situations differently. When people speak and they speak in a way that is hurtful, you've got to have conversations. You've got to hear apologies and you've got to see people move forward. That's the same thing I said about Drew Brees at the time that I'm saying now. I think it's easy to come in and say, let's just eliminate everybody. But at some point, you've also got to come in and say, how do we grow? How do we get better? And how do we make sure that people are listening to the impact that their words have? That's all I'm saying. 888 say ESPN 888-729-3776. We'll keep taking your take, obviously, as the show goes on. But it's a significant day for college football. And I say that around the Ivy League. And I know, don't roll your eyes. Don't roll your eyes. But there are, today, we will find out what the Ivy League intends to do with their sports calendar year. So I need to get a little expertise on it because it affects the entire community of college football. Well, let's head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We're joined by ESPN college football reporter Heather Dinich. Heather, obviously a ton of conversation about the Ivy League, what they're going to announce today with regards to how they'll handle their calendar. What's the latest that you're hearing?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if the Ivy League decides to cancel fall sports or postpone it indefinitely. Maybe there's a mention of the spring. But what I'm hearing from the big boys is that whatever they decide is not necessarily going to influence them in the immediate future. You know, the Power Five commissioners and athletic directors that I've talked to have said very respectfully, we will monitor the situation closely, but we will also be making our own decisions on our own timetable, which at this point is we're getting in a crunch time here. I think that we'll see some significant decisions from the Power Five and the Group of Five conferences later this month.
Well, and let's be honest, Heather, obviously we wouldn't be paying this much attention to Ivy League sports usually, but it all is about what the Power Five is going to decide. If we're in a world where different college conferences decide they're comfortable playing and others decide they're not, is there a liability concern for those that do?
Absolutely. And that's why the Ivy League decision is important, because while conference commissioners and athletic directors might not want to adhere to what they are doing, you better believe university presidents at every level from coast to coast are going to pay attention to what the president at Harvard has to say. There's an academic issue to this, right? And as American Athletic Conference Commissioner Mike Oresko told me, the presidents are extremely important in this because if there are no students in campus, then all bets are off when it comes to college sports.
What do we do, Heather, if we look at some situation? You know me, I split some of my time between Nashville and Connecticut, right? So I live two ways of handling COVID-19, basically. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see the SEC plow ahead and say, we want to play football. And I also wouldn't be surprised to see the Pac-12 decide they want nothing to do with it. So what do we do if some conferences want to play in spring and some want to play in fall and some don't want to play at all?
Well, based on what I'm hearing now, those five commissioners are going to do the best that they can to do this together. That being said, they also know that what you said might come into play, not necessarily because the conferences want to do their own thing, but because the individual states, you mentioned the Pac-12, look at Arizona's cases and Southern California right now in terms of the hot spots with the coronavirus pandemic. It could be out of the commissioner's hands. It could be that the coronavirus and the local and state government officials dictate what happens in each league. But I agree with you. I get the sense that those who can play will.
We're talking to college football reporter Heather Dinich. And, you know, Heather, there were some reports that the NFL doesn't seem interested in postponing the draft if the season were to move to spring. How much does partnership with the NFL impact college football's decision making?
A lot. And, you know, I think that not only are those Power Five commissioners paying attention to what the NFL is doing, along with every other major league sport, but they also have that as one of their contingency plans, the potential for a spring season. But I will tell you that nobody that I have talked to in a decision-making position, that being a conference commissioners or athletic directors, are extremely excited about the idea of playing in the spring because of that reason, right? That's one of the reasons. Not only that, but if there is a spring spring season, you're talking about playing March, April, May, most likely, which means around January, you would be doing what we're doing now, which is really entering that summer access and training and preseason. And that's coinciding with flu season and whatever's going on with the pandemic. And the people that I'm talking to are saying, well, not only do you have the NFL draft and whatever else might be going on there, and you might be missing some of your best players because of that, nobody knows that that point in time will be any better off than we are right now.
We're talking to ESPN college football reporter Heather Dinich. First, take your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. Heather, I got some chuckles months ago when all of this started, and I asked some guests about the NCAA deciding to offer eligibility back to players, to athletes that had their seasons canceled completely from spring sports. Everybody said, hey, they're not thinking about anything other than what's happening right now. My worry at the time was that precedent had been set. So now, if there is a world where we don't get college football, what happens to the eligibility across the board, given the fact that they've already said this calendar year that they're going to allow people to get an extra year? How do they handle that in football?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, you know, my gut is that everything stays the same as far as their eligibility, because everything that the athletic directors have been saying, especially during this voluntary workout period, is you will not lose your scholarship if you are not comfortable coming back. And I remember Penn State athletic director Sandy Barber said this on her Zoom teleconference a week or two ago. She took it a step further and said, not just summer workouts, if at any point during any of this you don't feel comfortable playing or participating, there won't be any penalties as far as your scholarship. So to me, that kind of, you know, one hand fits the other in terms of the eligibility, and I think that they just continue to allow the athletes to remain where they are in terms of that status.
Well, it's interesting because, Heather, we talk so much about the athletes, but there's also a coach here that is a concern to me, because while we realize that most of the athletes so far that have been tested seem to be fine and everybody's recovering, the coaches are much older. So how does coach health affect all of these decisions?
It's so important, and I'm glad you asked that, because a lot of what I'm hearing is, oh, the athletes will be fine, most of them are asymptomatic, or they recover quickly, whatever it might be. But yes, you're exactly right. You know, I had a great conversation with TCU athletic director Jeremiah Donati yesterday, and we were talking about, I said, have you figured out what happens yet if Gary Patterson actually gets this and has to quarantine for 14 days? And he said, well, he does have to quarantine, which means two Saturdays if you're talking about fall. He said, but Heather, imagine this. He said, what if coaches are tested positive and they are asymptomatic, or they have simply been in contact with somebody else who was tested positive and they have to quarantine? Basically, he's saying, what happens if you have a healthy coach who doesn't exhibit any symptoms and you tell him you can't coach for the next two Saturdays? That's like trying to cage a bear, right? I mean, if you're following CDC protocol, that's what the guy has to do. And meanwhile, from an athletic director's perspective, he's like, I'm paying him $5 million. I want him to coach, but he can't. So that's also one of the other issues. And these are very real conversations that they're having right now.
I'm just saying, I can picture some of the big name coaches we're all aware of just running away from the testing people leading up to the national championship game, because I can't imagine somebody looking at Saban and saying, hey, you don't get to coach this one, coach. You got to sit it out. Follow her on Twitter at CFB Heather, especially with all the breaking news today. Heather, as always, we appreciate your time, your expertise. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Great stuff from Heather. And, you know, it stands out to me that we've got to get comfortable with things being very strange in college football this year. I genuinely believe that some version of college football will start. Will it finish? I don't know. Will some conferences want to play in winter? Maybe. Will some conferences try and get it done right away so that they can get some shortened season out? Yes. How will we have a national champion? I have no idea. But I know this. At some point, no matter what the Ivy League does, the rest of college football is going to look around and say, well, we'll do our own thing. But I still think that the liability conversation is the most important, because a can of worms is open. If one conference, led by some of the smartest people in America, turns around and says it's not safe to play, and then kids are put at risk in other conferences, will they have some sort of legal action if, in fact, they get sick? I think that's the biggest question that we need to get answers to that will impact whatever the Ivy League decides today. That's why it will impact what the rest of Power Five at least has to look at in my eyes. Coming up, we'll take your calls. I want you to tell me the one athlete you want to see live. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 right now. Don't go back into history. But the one guy right now that you would take your golden ticket, he's the one you're going to have to see. We'll take more of your take next. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN App, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I want you guys to hang out with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. The one athlete you want to see live. Who's the best player in all the sports? Like, the person that I give you one golden ticket. One golden ticket. You can only go to one, see one athlete live in today's world. Who's it going to be? That's what we're taking your calls on. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you can get in on the conversation. Let's go to Mike in Missouri. Mike, what's your take on this one?
Hey, it's Mike Rand, fan account. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. What's your take?
Hey, so I actually have a last-minute change to Jorge Masvidal. I want to be on Fight Island. I want to be with Stu walking him up in the ring and cheering him on in Fight Island.
See, that comes back. I love the take on it, Mike. Like, I think there's this like pomp and circumstance. Like, let's face it. If I told you that you could go to see Jorge Masvidal like in a parking lot in the mall, you taking it? No. But Fight Island? Oh, you're taking Fight Island all day long. I get it. Like, I get the excitement over Fight Island. Like, it's the experience. Steve in Tennessee. Steve, what you got? What's your take on this one?
Julio Jones. I've only seen him one time, and that was they did a scrimmage down in Dalton, which is about 20 minutes from here, with the Titans once. And the guy's amazing just at a practice session. I would love to see him in a game situation, though.
Steve, I love that take. I think we there's certain guys we just take for granted. And even today when we were having our conversation prepping the show about quarterbacks and who you destination guys you want to go see, we all laughed at the fact that Matt Ryan just doesn't get enough love in the conversation. Julio also in that. Like, we just sort of accept his greatness. But I do believe, to your point, that Julio Jones is the type of player that, you know, 20 years from now you'll say you saw him live. Levi in Arizona is calling back. Levi, I want to party with you, my friend. You want to defend Lamar Jackson over Patrick Mahomes as your guy. So go ahead. I'll let you do it. Go for it.
Yes, man. Okay. So it has to be Lamar Jackson, man. I'm not going to say he's the best player in the NFL, but, you know, he's got to be top two or top three. He had a bad game in the playoffs this year and the year before that, but the team in general had a bad game. And I would say that people try to say that if he had the Chiefs offense, that he'd be just as good as Pat Mahomes. I'm just going to say that if we played a more complete game like we've been playing all season, that we would have probably easily won that game against Tennessee and might have went to the Super Bowl. But to say that Lamar Jackson is like three or four steps below Patrick Mahomes and to overlook his ability to run the ball so well, I mean, is to just try to, you know, downplay him. I don't like that. Like, I feel like ESPN and all these other networks need to go ahead and start giving him a little bit more love. And, I mean, he went 14-2 last year. Like,
no, I don't take anything away from going. You're telling me, though, like, you're honestly telling me that at this point you put the 14-2 season. I mean, I would argue that from my counter. Drew Brees went 13-3 last season. I know he missed some games due to injury, but completed, 75% of his passes? Nobody ever touches him. You know who he's throwing the ball to. He still gets it out, and all the Saints ever do is win over the last 3 years. They have the best record in the NFL. So if we're just talking record, wouldn't you put Drew Brees in over Lamar Jackson?
No. Lamar Jackson is that whole offense, man. Like, you can't put Drew Brees on the Ravens and expect the same thing or even close to that. I mean, he might go 13-3, but I'm going to say that Lamar's going to look better going 13-3.
Oh, see, well, that's where we disagree. And I appreciate your take on it. Look, I'm a big Lamar fan. I just think that we suddenly look, and I'm a fan of the way he plays the game, and I'm a fan of his versatility. But if I'm looking across the board at the top quarterbacks in the league, the guys that I'm going to climb over everybody to see, well, I think we all know that number one on this list is Patrick Mahomes. And not even just because he's the best player in the NFL, but also because the way he plays the game is maddeningly fun to watch. I hate to admit it. Even as a Raiders fan, I have to admit it. At some point that I watched, every time he drops back, I'm looking at it saying, what's he going to do now? I mean, he's just so stinking good. Now, number two for me, and if we're talking quarterbacks, I'm going Russell Wilson. I mean, so I'm going Russell Wilson. I'm going Drew Brees. So the top three quarterbacks in the league don't include Lamar Jackson's name to me. And that's not because Lamar Jackson's not great. That's the one thing that I think is funny about this. Like, it is okay in my mind to say Lamar Jackson is a very good quarterback. It's also okay in my mind to turn around and say, but I think Drew Brees is better. And it doesn't mean that I'm disrespectful to Lamar Jackson. It just simply means that I think we sleep on how stinking good Drew Brees has been. Also, where's Aaron Rodgers going to this conversation? Like, it's more complicated than we think to simply anoint Lamar Jackson as one of the three or best, four best quarterbacks in the league. Because there's a lot of quarterbacks out there we simply take for granted for all that they've accomplished. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. ESPN Radio Afternoon coming up next. Stan Verrett, Neil Everett. They're going to be joined by Basketball Hall of Famer Bill Walton, and which should be a great episode. Thanks for hanging out with us as always. Stay safe out there. Keep listening to ESPN Radio.